HR Info. Das Interview.
Mit Christoph Schäffer. In der Architektur gibt es eine Handvoll internationaler Stars, die fast überall gefragt sind und deren Formensprache man sofort erkennt. Der New Yorker Daniel Liebeskind gehört definitiv dazu. Mit seinem Entwurf für das Jüdische Museum in Berlin begann seine Karriere. Für den Wiederaufbau von Ground Zero in Manhattan entwickelte er den Masterplan. Mittlerweile entstehen weltweit Gebäude mit den für Liebeskind typischen gezackten Formen. In diesen Tagen ist Daniel Liebeskind in Frankfurt unterwegs, und zwar in Sachen Musik. Zusammen mit der Alten Oper Frankfurt hat er ein Konzertprojekt entwickelt mit dem Titel One Day in Life. Ich habe Daniel Liebeskind in der Alten Oper getroffen und gefragt, wie er Musik und Architektur zusammenbringt. Spielt da Magie eine Rolle? Daniel Liebeskind, do you believe in magic?
Well, magic is the technology of myth. So if you believe in myths, you believe in magic. But we do live in a complex society and we have to have an orientation in it. So there's got to be some form of magic in doing things.
Are there things in your life where you say this can't happen just by accident?
Well, you know, I'm not a believer in ghosts or in witches, but even in the probability theory, there is a logic of unexpected encounters and unexpected results, because probability is only statistical, but the one piece that does not fit into it is also part of probability.
Daniel Liebeskind glaubt also nicht an Hexen oder Geister, aber Mythen und Magie helfen für ihn bei der Orientierung in einer komplexen Welt. Sogar die mathematische Wahrscheinlichkeitstheorie kennt magische Momente, meint Daniel Liebeskind. Zusammen mit der Alten Oper hat sich der Architekt ein Konzertprojekt ausgedacht. One Day in Life heißt es. 75 Konzerte in 24 Stunden und das an 18 verschiedenen Orten in Frankfurt. Auch das HR-Sinfonieorchester ist dabei. Das Ganze begann mit einer Zeichnung, die den Frankfurter Stadtplan neu interpretiert als musikalische Partitur. Diese Zeichnung hat Daniel Liebeskind zu versteckten Orten in der Stadt Frankfurt geführt und inspiriert von diesen Orten hat er Musik ausgewählt, die dort gespielt werden soll. Zum Beispiel Mozarts Requiem in einem Straßenbahndepot, eine Beethoven-Klaviersonate im Boxcamp im Stadtteil Gallus oder Akkordeonmusik in einer fahrenden Straßenbahn.
I had the drawing of Frankfurt, and as I looked at it and traced some of its lines, I began to believe that you can read the city as a musical composition. It has lines, it has curves, it has pauses. It is a musical score if you start looking at it from a different dimension. And then I sort of overlaid it with new possibilities of amplifying that musical composition, which is the city plan, and discovering within it places, spots that were very, very unexpected.
For example?
Well, I didn't expect to find a bunker that hasn't really been available to the public at all. I didn't expect to discover Oskar Schindler's house right next to the, you know, main train station. I didn't expect to discover the swimming pool, the underground of the National Library. But these were discoveries that came partly through drawing, partly through the plans, and partly through kind of a dream city, which is a city of music.
How did you find the music for these places? Because at every place there will be a concert with different kinds of music. How did you bring places and music together?
I did not bring them by some academic plan. It was a simultaneous intuition that just came together. I can only tell you that I didn't plan it in some way. It just emerged out of a certain tune of the city, the tune of the place, and a kind of attunement to that feeling and emotion, because, of course, neither music nor architecture are just abstract arts. They're also very emotive.
HR Info, das Interview mit dem Architekten Daniel Liebeskind, der sich ein Konzertprojekt für Frankfurt ausgedacht hat unter dem Titel One Day in Life. Mr. Liebeskind, does this mean that you turn back to your roots in some way because you have been a musician before you became an architect?
You know, I never think I abandoned music. I just changed the instruments. You know, I change one instrument for another, but music and architecture are really not just close, but to me, music is the basis of architecture, not the other way around. Even historically, we know that music came before architecture. For example, in Athens, at the Acropolis, first there was the threshing floor, the dance that created the road and the space and the field in which many, many hundreds of years later, the Parthenon would be built. So music has the primacy over architecture. And if you don't love music, you cannot love architecture.
But you say you just changed the instrument. What kind of instrument are you playing when you are creating a building?
Look, a composer has a system of notes, let's say in Western music, the tonal system, eight note system, has a piece of paper, has a certain structure, the lines of music, there's the treble bass, the bass, the basso continuo, there's a structure, just like an architect. We have a system, you know, also can be done with a pencil or a pen, a kind of a code that is established historically. But then within that code, there are really very close connections, because both of them have to be arts that are conducted and also performed. Very often the architect is, like the composer, somebody who's invisible in the music. And even on stage, the composer turns his back to the public. His face is not seen, or her face is not seen. And it's similar very much with architecture. You'd make a drawing. How is it possible from a drawing to create a whole city or a building? It's the same thing. How is it possible from just a notation system to create an orchestral score or a requiem?
Daniel Liebeskind sieht also alle möglichen Parallelen zwischen Musik und Architektur. In beiden Fällen entwirft jemand etwas auf Papier. Der Komponist entwirft Musik, die er dem Notensystem folgend aufs Papier schreibt. Und genauso der Architekt. Auch er hat bestimmte Parameter, an denen er sich orientiert, zeichnet etwas auf Papier und dann wird das von anderen umgesetzt. Musik und Architektur hängen also für Daniel Liebeskind eng zusammen. Ich habe ihn gefragt, heißt das denn jetzt Back to the Roots für ihn, wenn er sich so sehr mit Konzerten, mit Musik beschäftigt? Denn begonnen hatte er tatsächlich mal als Musiker. Nein, sagt Liebeskind, die Musik habe ich nie wirklich hinter mir gelassen. Das Instrument, das er als Kind erlernte, war das Akkordeon. Ich habe ihn gefragt, warum, und er hat mir eine Geschichte erzählt, die mit seinen Eltern zu tun hat, die polnisch-jüdische Überlebende des Holocaust waren, mit Antisemitismus im Polen der 50er Jahre und mit einem Klavier im Koffer.
The instrument you first learned as a child was the accordion. Why?
You know, I played this strange instrument for strange reasons. My parents, you know, I grew up in Poland. My parents were survivors of the Holocaust. I grew up in an era of rabid antisemitism and communism. And my parents were just afraid to bring a piano to the house, to the courtyard. They were afraid of their neighbors. So they brought me the piano in a suitcase. It turned out to be the accordion. You know, that's how I was destined to play this instrument. And yet I'm so happy, because had I not played an instrument, I would have never become an architect.
Because if you would have learned the piano, you would have stayed alive.
Well, when I came to Israel and won the America Israel Culture Foundation Prize for Music, together, by the way, with Itzhak Perlman, Isaac Stern, who was the head of the jury, turned to me and he said, you know, Mr. Liebeskind, at the age of 13, you've already exhausted all the possibilities of this instrument. Now you have to play the piano.
But you didn't.
Well, you know, it's very hard to go from the vertical to the horizontal. The vertical keyboard of the accordion to the horizontal keyboard of the piano, it's a huge... And then my life took a turn and I got involved in other things, and yet music was always part of it.
Daniel Liebeskind spielte also das Akkordeon sehr professionell und in prominenter Begleitung, aber die Grenzen, die das Instrument seiner musikalischen Entwicklung setzte, brachten ihn schließlich dazu, zur Architektur zu wechseln. HR Info, das Interview mit dem Architekten Daniel Liebeskind, der übrigens diese Woche einen runden Geburtstag feiert. Am 12. Mai wird er 70. Daher jetzt ein kleines Spiel für Daniel Liebeskind, ein paar kurze Stichworte zum Thema Älterwerden, verbunden jeweils mit der Frage, was geht mit 70 besser als mit 40? Sind Sie entspannter? Haben Sie mehr Ideen? Lebt es sich besser mit Ruhm und Geld? Wie sieht es aus mit Zukunftsplänen? Und kann man mit 70 überhaupt noch Cowboy-Stiefel tragen?
What is better now? Are you more relaxed, for example?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would only say that it takes time to be young. You know, you're not young just by chronology. It takes effort and longevity to discover youth. That's kind of my experience. I think I was older when I first started architecture, and I'm a little bit getting younger.
Do you have more ideas, for example?
Different ideas. And not only more ideas, but different ideas, different directions. And I think that's the wonder of possibilities of creativity.
You also are much more famous. You earn a lot of money. Is that better than being 40 and starting with this business?
Well, you know, I was a late bloomer in architecture. And by the way, I never made more money than when I was a music performer. You know, I performed with high fees together with Itzhak Perlman, with Ashkenazi, with very famous classical masters. And I think my salary was much higher than when I was 14, 15, 16, 17 than it is now. But I have a lot of fun now. Architecture is a wonderful field because it brings so many of my interests together, whether it's music, whether it's painting, whether it's science, mathematics, history, memory. It's a fantastic field.
What is the age of wearing cowboy boots? 30, 40, or 70?
Cowboy boots are eternal. You know, when I was in Valima in Samoa, I went to the burial ground of Robert Louis Stevenson. And on his grave, it said, please bury me with my boots on. So yes, there has been a long tradition here of poets.
You wear them every day?
I wear them every day.
Yeah.
I don't even have a pair of shoes.
And the last question concerning your age, plans for the future. Is it easier to have plans when you are young, or do you have plans also with 70?
No, you should never have plans. I never had plans. You know, people who have plans usually get very disappointed because the planning should not be done by us, but by reality.
Keine Pläne machen, dann gibt's auch keine Enttäuschung, sagt Daniel Liebeskind in HR Info das Interview. Ich will genauer wissen, wie er eigentlich arbeitet. Welche Rolle spielen bei seinen Entwürfen solche Elemente wie Zufall oder auch die Magie? Es gibt einen Entwurf von Daniel Liebeskind für das Imperial War Museum in Manchester, also ein Museum, das sich dem Gedenken an den Krieg widmet. Und für den Entwurf hat Daniel Liebeskind sich eine Teekanne gekauft, die er auf den Boden geworfen hat. Es blieben drei große Scherben übrig, die er neu zusammengesetzt hat, und so entstand die Grundform für das Museum. Ich wollte wissen, was steckt denn hinter dieser Methode?
When you designed the Imperial War Museum in Manchester, you bought a teapot and threw it on the floor. Why did you do that?
I threw it actually out of the window in a plastic bag. You know, I wanted to see, first of all, a teapot is the quintessential English device. There's no English woman or English man who has not experienced a teapot, which is a kind of a little globe, a little world. And when I threw it out of the window, I wanted to see what it looks like when it's broken. Because I thought that the world is shattered in conflicts, and Imperial War Museum is about conflict. I wanted to see what does the globe look like physically when it breaks into pieces. And I got my idea of the shards, that the world is not what we see it in on TV, this kind of globe on Google Earth or something. The world is shattered through conflicts, through wars, and we have to do something to put it back together across all the divides, to bring people together, to bring peace, to bring something that alleviates the conflicts that are too often around us.
So there's a strong symbolic meaning also in the forms you used.
Oh, yes. Even the floor in the Imperial War Museum in Manchester is curved. When you come into the exhibitions, you don't realize it, but as you walk through the very large field, you realize there's something happening to you. Gravity is acting on you. You may not know why, but you realize later on that you have been on a curved Earth-like plate. And I think that's what we have to realize, that we are all part of the same world.
Your most famous building, at least in Germany, of course, is the Jewish Museum in Berlin, which was also your first building you ever realized. I would like to focus on this symbolical meaning of forms. You have voids, you have this zigzag line. Is it possible to tell stories or even history by architecture?
I think that's what architecture is for. An architecture which doesn't tell stories is just an abstract machine. I think the great architecture that I've always loved is architecture which tells you a story that has complexity to it. It's not just a one-liner, and gets the participant involved in that story and appreciates the participant as the co-author of that story by walking through, by looking, by being there. It's the respect for the visitor, really.
Does this work only with, for example, a Jewish museum or a war museum, which is connected to the symbolism, or does it work also when you build something usual, like a residential building or a shopping center?
Well, it's a different story when you build a residential building where people are living in high density, or whether you build a shopping center, or if you build a hospital or a school. But every building has a story. They are on different levels, different kinds of stories. But even in my project for Ground Zero or residential projects, you know, in Italy or elsewhere, there's always a story that is connected to the deeper tradition of the city.
Das war jetzt mal ein Bekenntnis von Daniel Liebeskind, dem Architekten, zu der Art und Weise, wie er arbeitet. Architektur, gute Architektur, sollte immer eine Geschichte erzählen, meint er. Und zwar eine Geschichte, die den Benutzer, den Besucher des Gebäudes mit einbezieht, wo er seine eigenen Erfahrungen machen kann. Das gilt für das Imperial War Museum in Manchester, wo eine zersplitterte Teekanne Ausgangspunkt war für den Entwurf, der beides symbolisiert. Die Teekanne steht für England, aber auch für einen Globus, der in Scherben gegangen ist. Und natürlich auch das berühmte jüdische Museum in Berlin. Das war Daniel Liebeskinds erster Entwurf überhaupt, der realisiert wurde. Da gibt es eine Zickzacklinie des Gebäudes. Es gibt dazwischen Leerstellen, in denen der Besucher durch kahle Räume wandert. Das alles symbolisiert natürlich auch etwas. Wie war es denn für ihn, sich an diesem Wettbewerb für das jüdische Museum in Berlin zu beteiligen, als einer, der aus einer Familie von Holocaust-Überlebenden stammt, ausgerechnet ein jüdisches Museum in der Hauptstadt des früheren Nazi-Deutschland?
When you decided to take part in the competition for the Jewish Museum in Berlin, coming, as you mentioned, from a family of Polish-Jewish Holocaust survivors, what kind of a challenge was it for you to build such a project exactly in Germany, in the capital of former Nazi Germany?
It was really a tremendous challenge because the public might not remember, but the museum had five different names. It didn't start as a Jewish museum at all. It was, you know, a Erweiterung, an extension of the Berlin Museum. And in the competition, more than 200 architects just made an addition and then a small room called the Jüdische Abteilung. But, you know, I didn't think that was the right way to look at the project, that you couldn't make just a Berlin history with a small Jüdische Abteilung room that looked like a little synagogue. You had to kind of explore the possibilities of connecting Berlin back to itself across the abyss and into the future with hope and beauty of the city of Berlin, and tell it through the notion of memory. How does one remember things which are difficult to remember, and how does one also move towards the light across that void? Of course, it was a challenge. Different governments. There was even a cancellation of the museum, if you remember, by a unanimous vote of the Berlin Parliament. Very seldom does a building get built after it is unanimously voted not to be built. But sometimes things happen in unexpected ways. And I was very fortunate that at the end, the governor of Berlin decided, even though it took a very long time, to create such a building.
You also designed voids, empty spaces in this museum. Did you feel the void also in the German society?
Sure, you can fill a city with buildings, but you cannot eliminate the void. And I wanted to express that void, that emptiness, in a building which is, of course, a museum building. And my clients, the city of Berlin, always said, now, why are we building a building if we have spaces where we cannot hang art? Where we don't have air conditioning in the summer, we don't have heating in the winter. But I said, you know, not everything is about just objects. Sometimes it's about the experience of feeling where you are, what the history was before us, and how do we look at that history in the future.
Man kann die Leerstellen im Gedächtnis einer Stadt nicht mit Gebäuden füllen. Und genau diese Leere, die wollte er eben auch ausdrücken in seinem Entwurf für das Jüdische Museum in Berlin. HR Info, das Interview mit dem Architekten Daniel Liebeskind. Von ihm stammt auch der Masterplan für den Wiederaufbau auf dem Ground Zero-Gelände in Manhattan. Und dabei wollte er einen visuellen Bezug herstellen zwischen den neuen Hochhäusern an der Stelle des alten World Trade Centers und der Freiheitsstatue von New York. Meine Frage an ihn bei seiner Ankunft in New York als Jugendlicher, fast noch als Kind, als Immigrant, der nach New York kam, welchen ersten Eindruck hat er in Erinnerung von der Freiheitsstatue in Manhattan?
Can you remember the moment when you first saw this Statue of Liberty when you came to New York as a new immigrant?
It's an unforgettable feeling, you know, because I came by boat. And I remember my mother waking my sister and I very early in the morning, maybe 4 o'clock in the morning, saying, get up, get up, we're coming to New York. And we stood on the deck of the ship with many other immigrants, looking through the cloudy, late August weather, and out of the mirage, out of nowhere, appeared the skyline of New York and that incredible statue, which looked to me twice the height of Empire State Building at that time, with its torch, so dramatic as the ship moved up the Hudson River to the piers. And it was an unforgettable moment of a feeling of possibility, of freedom, of all that a young boy dreams about when leaving a totalitarian horizon behind him.
Is the Statue of Liberty in the United States still today a symbol for openness, for a society which is willing to embrace also refugees, immigrants coming?
Well, we see in our elections the Republican candidates coming straightforward with bigotry against Muslims, against Mexicans, against foreigners, against refugees. This is a shameful misreading of American history. The Statue of Liberty, on it, there is a poem by Emma Lazarus, a famous American poet, Jewish poet, who said, "Give me your poor, give me your tired masses who have been refused entry to other places. Bring them to us. This is America. This is the land of freedom." Now, of course, the world is going through a very wide right-wing swing. Neo-fascism has become popular again. Anti-Semitism popular again. Governments of authoritarians are popular again. But history tells us that we must never forget and never allow this again to prevail in this world.
Und bei diesem Thema wird Daniel Liebeskind plötzlich ganz ernst. Die Werte, für die die Freiheitsstatue steht und die er selbst erfahren hat als Immigrant in New York, also Offenheit gegenüber Flüchtlingen, gegenüber Menschen, die aus schwierigen Umständen ihre Heimat verlassen, diese Werte werden mit Füßen getreten. Die republikanischen Kandidaten, sagt Daniel Liebeskind, und er meint damit die Vorwahlen in den USA, tun sich hervor mit Fanatismus gegen Moslems, gegen Mexikaner, gegen Ausländer und Flüchtlinge, und das Ganze sei eine beschämende Fehlinterpretation der amerikanischen Geschichte. Ein Rechtsruck geht durch die Welt, warnt Liebeskind. Neofaschismus ist wieder populär geworden, Antisemitismus, autoritäre Regime. Und wir müssen aus der Geschichte lernen, dass wir das nicht zulassen dürfen. Dann wollte ich natürlich wissen, wie sieht er denn die Haltung Deutschlands in dieser Situation?
Well, I see Germany as a leading light in the world today. When Germany decided to accept refugees, when there was a strong statement made that this democracy appreciates the plight of people, Germany in one second became a different Germany. People can't say again, oh, this is Germany, Germany. Suddenly Germany is like a light onto the world, doing what the world should be doing, which is accepting those who have left under difficult circumstances looking for a better life. I really admire Germany.
I hope that it's still true these days because the society
I know.
Is turning.
Of course, things are not easy and it's not easy to see the trends. But I think the statement was very, very clear in Germany. It's a democracy, it's a powerful democracy that knows what is true, what is good for people, and knows also the horrors of bigotry, of racism. It's a model. I wish our Republican candidates learned something from the Chancellor of Germany.
Von Angela Merkel lernen sollten die republikanischen Kandidaten in den USA, sagt Daniel Liebeskind. Er sieht Deutschland als Licht, als Vorbild, als Leuchtturm in der Flüchtlingspolitik. Mit der Aufnahme von Flüchtlingen sei Deutschland von einer Sekunde auf die andere ein anderes geworden und habe demonstriert, dass es eine starke Demokratie sei, die genau wisse, was der Horror des Fanatismus und des Rassismus mit sich bringt. Jetzt sei Deutschland ein Modell für die Welt. Nochmal zurück nach Frankfurt in HR Info, das Interview mit Daniel Liebeskind. In dieser Stadt ist er nun viel unterwegs gewesen, um sein Konzertprojekt One Day in Life vorzubereiten. Hat denn der Architekt Liebeskind im Zentrum von Frankfurt einen Platz gesehen, wo er gerne ein Gebäude hinstellen würde?
Well, you know, architecture is not, at least to me, a kind of a fantasy. I want to build this, I want to build this. You know, it's a social art. Someone has to come to you saying, you know, we need a school, we need a playground for kids, we need a place to work, we need a, you know, affordable housing. And luckily, I am doing a project not far from Frankfurt, but of course I would love to do something in Frankfurt. It's one of the really modern cities of Europe with high-density architecture, with tall buildings. It's really unique in Germany and very inspiring because of that.
So you're still waiting that somebody from Frankfurt is coming to you?
Always. You know, an architect always is hoping to be approached by somebody who has a reason to build something.
Daniel Liebeskind, thank you very, very much for this interview.
Thank you so much.
Das war HR Info, das Interview mit dem Architekten Daniel Liebeskind. Das Konzertprojekt One Day in Life, das Daniel Liebeskind zusammen mit der Alten Oper entwickelt hat, ist am 21. und 22. Mai an verschiedenen Orten in Frankfurt zu erleben. Mehr Infos dazu und das Interview als Podcast zum Nachhören oder Abonnieren finden Sie im Netz unter hrinforadio.de. Mein Name ist Christoph Schäffer.